Hey guys, welcome to the Martial and Healing Arts channel. I'm Rafe Kelly, founder of Evolve Move Play. I'm extremely excited to be sponsoring this channel. Martial and Healing Arts have been key aspects of embodiment and self-cultivation for thousands of years. I have some of my best friends in the industry, Rory Miller, Matt Thornton, Edward Hines, presenting here, and I'm really excited to share what they have to say with you guys. You're gonna love it. So Evolve Move Play is an ecology of practices of movement, mindfulness, nature connection, and community. And within the movement, we have a big emphasis on moving in nature and being able to do parkour. We also like to lift weights and throw things around, but there's a huge aspect of martial arts, and I've been training martial arts since I was 6 years old. So it's really exciting to be able to sponsor this channel in particular. If you're interested in my work, check out my talks on the Main Stage and the Movement Anatomy channel. If you can't get to either of those live, you can check us out at Rafe Kelly on Instagram, get all your awesome embodiment giveaways, and for now, just enjoy this amazing channel. It's gonna be an awesome show.
I'm going to introduce our speaker to you. He's one of the most sought after martial arts instructors in the world. He holds black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, Judo, Aikido, and Japanese Jiu-Jitsu. He's recognized as a third degree black belt by the International Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Federation. He's also written a couple of books called Martial Apprentice and Becoming the Black Belt. Please welcome Roy Dean, and handing it over to you.
Thank you so much for having me, and it's a pleasure to speak with you all virtually. I've been looking forward to this and giving it quite a bit of thought. Optimizing your BJJ training is something that, you know, a lot of people want to do. Of course, you want to, jiu-jitsu is about efficiency and you want to be able to train very efficiently. But Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is a very challenging art, and there's it's so vast and in some areas maybe nebulous and overwhelming to people because there's so many techniques to learn. Which technique should I learn? Which teacher should I learn from? What constitutes a good school? There's so many questions that you have to answer, usually kind of on your own as you go through the journey. And a good teacher will be able to guide you through that process. And hopefully I can save you a couple steps along the way through this presentation, wherever you are on the BJJ journey, whether you are actually training and are an advanced practitioner, or even if you aren't even training at all and are just thinking about getting involved in jiu-jitsu. There's never been a better time to be involved in the art than now. The YouTube has changed everything, the distribution of knowledge, digital downloads. We're talking about an open market in technical exposure and ideas when it comes to jiu-jitsu. So it's evolving rapidly, and I feel lucky to be an ambassador of the art, and I put together a little presentation for you guys, and hopefully you'll like it. So let me share the screen, if I may. So let's do this. And all right, how are we doing, people? Can everyone see that? Okay, all right, so we have optimizing your BJJ training. Here's the deal. Different skill levels require different kinds of training. So when you are a white belt, it varies dramatically what you need to focus on and the kind of training you need to do than when you are a blue, purple, brown, or black belt in jiu-jitsu. Now, I'm going to give you several different kind of slices of the BJJ journey according to belt levels. Now, belt levels in BJJ are not fully defined, but in my mind, they do correlate to different levels of ability, which one would hope for when it comes to belt levels in a martial art, and different kind of skill requirements. And initially, you know, people think you just go to the gym and train hard, but that hard training takes many, many different forms over the, you know, 6 to 10 years it takes to earn a black belt, or sometimes even longer. depending on your personal journey. So I'm going to break this down according to belt levels, and we will go over that, as well as I'll give some thoughts on cross-training. When is the appropriate time to do cross-training? Cross-training in jiu-jitsu. Jiu-jitsu is a very high art. And what I mean by that is it takes a tremendous amount of coordination, consistency, discipline, sensitivity, dexterity with all your limbs, not just your hands, your feet, your knees, your elbows, inside and out, your head, you know. So being able to learn some of the dynamics that fuel other martial arts, as well as training in other movement arts, which is what I think the Embodiment Conference is really all about, I think that can augment your training in a very positive and beneficial way. And I think this is one of the most important things. You shift your goals over time when it comes to martial arts and jiu-jitsu. Initially, you might come in with a goal of self-defense or self-protection. And then over time, that morphs, because you don't really need to defend yourself. Once you can defend yourself against experts, to defend yourself against somebody who's untrained is, frankly, it's a little bit boring. So that can't be your focus and your drive anymore. So that's going to morph, shift, and change over time. All right. So, stages of the journey. There are many, many stages of the jiu-jitsu journey, and it can be a long road. That is not meant to discourage you. It's actually the good news. Very often, when people take up a new physical discipline, and this is not a criticism of other disciplines, like, for example, marathon running, I'll just take that as an example. You know, it's essentially the same thing, just varying. The skill is the same, you just improve over time. With jiu-jitsu, it's much deeper and more complicated than that. And although that can be frustrating, good jiu-jitsu is often very frustrating and inspiring at the same time. So to be able to be frustrated is actually a good sign along the jiu-jitsu journey. So even though it's a long journey, it's a marathon, not a sprint, that's actually good news. Okay, now, just for those that are not familiar with the ranking system in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, take a look at this. So we have the standard Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu ranking system. I'm not doing anything above black belt, and I'm not doing any kid ranks there. But this was presented to me at my academy by my students. And those are all Howard Combat Kimono belts, which for those in the BJJ community, he was a kind of a pioneer when it came to really, really fine gis and equipment for jiu-jitsu. So we have white belt at the bottom, which is really one great place to be. Then you got blue belt above that. Typical time in between ranks is about 2 years. Some people, if you have previous grappling experience, you might even get the blue belt in 6 months. But for most people with no previous experience, we're looking at about 2 years. And then it's going to be another 2 to 3 years before you get your purple. And for those that haven't really trained, you're thinking 5 years to a belt? That's a long time. I think my kid got his black belt in Taekwondo in like 1.5. But those things, the ranking systems between martial arts don't really correlate. They do occasionally, but in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, especially with adult ranks, we are looking at a long and challenging road. And that is what attracts people most of the time. People are into doing things that are difficult. I'm definitely one of those people. I enjoy a challenge. And being able to get to that purple belt, that's really like the mini black belt. After that, typically, actually from purple to brown, it's a little bit shorter. I would say, you know, 2 years, it depends. It can be 1.5 years, whatever. These are small leaps in between purple, brown, and black. And then black belt is there as the ultimate symbol. And most people in Western society recognize that as a symbol of expertise and of power and discipline and self-control and knowledge. It's definitely not given out lightly, at least by myself and in my organization. You really got to earn that stuff. And that is what keeps people coming back, because they know the symbol that they have around their waist correlates to an actual skill level that they can defend. So I'm going to go through each of these ranks, and I'm not going to spend a tremendous amount of time on each one, but I want to talk about the benefits and what you want to be looking at. And even if you're a teacher, I think this is good for you to be able to pass on to your students on what they should be looking at. So we got the white belt here. So by the way, a lot of these photos are by my friend Rick Ellis. He's a black belt under me. I believe he might even be watching right now. So the white belt, that actually is my original white belt. I started training when I was 16 years old in Japan. I was sent there as an exchange student, and that's the Ane white belt that they gave me with my first judo gi. And the white belt is, you know, a lot of people want to rush to get to blue belt immediately, but you actually don't want to do that. You want to just take your time and learn how to be a competent white belt, because you have low expectations. And the darker your belt gets, the heavier the responsibility to be able to defend that belt rank. Now, every day is different. You're not going to be able to beat everybody on every day. But trust me, by the time you reach purple or brown, people expect a level of performance out of you. And, you know, ultimately, we're all doing this because we enjoy it. It's a hobby. But when you strap on that white belt, when you find a teacher, and hopefully you do some due diligence and find a teacher in your area. My recommendation, I get a lot of people to write to me and they're like, do you have a school, one of your schools in my area? And the advice is always the same. Check out every school. Don't even participate. Just go watch, soak in the vibe, and evaluate. You know, is the teacher accessible? Is he, maybe you want to be in a school where they're strict disciplinarians. Maybe you want to be in a school where it's more friendly and chill. You know, you want to go where you are going to enjoy it, where you're going to fit in, and where you will be able to go consistently. That is so important that you don't have to go out of your way too far. I mean, I've driven an hour each way to be able to train for a long period of time, but I'm super hardcore. And if you're a white belt, you want to have a place that's relatively convenient for you so that you can become consistent and, you know, and you can learn what it takes to become a competent white belt. So here is a video I wanted to kind of share with you guys. This is actually the first online black belt demonstration that I promoted one of my affiliates in Moscow to the rank of black belt, and we did it online because of COVID. And I want to show you the positional escapes that he started out with, and I'll turn the volume down here a little bit. But I have these guys at black belt demonstrating what you should be learning at white belt and at blue belt and, you know, everything. But essentially what you want to do is learn how to escape from the worst positions. So we have mount escapes that he starts out with, and then we go to a perpendicular position, which is side mount escapes. And, you know, note that he's doing this against no resistance. And this is what you got to do. You have to learn the pathway into open space. You have to learn, you see that bridge right there and that turn. These are the fundamental movements that make up other movements and techniques in jiu-jitsu. So it's not about doing some sexy submission on somebody. You want to learn how to do, essentially make space by overcoming the friction of your body connected to the ground and be able to escape these inferior positions. And a lot of it has to do with being able to block a balance post of theirs and being able to hip up. And the, now these are sweeps, these are other ways of transitioning into a different position. And, you know, this is the stuff you need to learn as a white belt. But I would say most important are those positional escapes, side mount escapes, and mount escapes.
Sorry to interrupt you there, Roy. I apologize. You might need to get out of full screen view. It seems that the maybe the visual isn't quite clear.
Okay. Is it now? Is that just with the video, or is that with the photos as well?
I'm just asking. Sorry, one second here.
Sure.
No, that's okay. I'll just come in. Yeah, I've just got it all open on another laptop, and I've got it on. Is it okay? It's clear on your screen. I'm so sorry for interrupting. It's just not the full screen on the bottom right hand side, Roy. When you share it, there's a couple of little arrows, and that'll just minimize the screen a little bit so everybody can see the full view.
Okay. Let me see here. Now, can you see that? Can you see the keynote? It at this not full screen view, is this acceptable?
I am able to see it. Natalie, are you able to see it?
I can absolutely see it. I was just not seeing the whole screen. I'm seeing the whole screen on the screen that I'm looking at now, but I've got a secondary screen going on. I've logged in as a panelist and I'm not seeing the whole thing that I'm seeing on my
gotcha. I can totally stick with this view if people are comfortable with it.
If people are okay with it, let's just stick with it. Up to you.
Okay. Let me know if I need to switch. Is that okay?
Okay. Look, the participants are saying everything's clear to them. Full screen looks great. So just keep going. It's great. Oh,
okay.
Thanks for that.
Okay. So here I am wearing a white belt. I'm a black belt at this point, but this is for my DVD, The White Belt Bible. And look, the white belt is something that, look, the color changes, but do you really change? You shouldn't. You should be the empty cup, tabula rasa, blank slate. You always want to be open to new information. And I think by keeping that humble and kind of curious attitude, you're really going to go far and you will accelerate your development and end up as a blue belt. Okay, so I have an analogy that I like to use when I talk about the different belt levels. At white belt, you're learning, you're learning how to write. Then at blue belt, you're learning words. And you have to kind of absorb words from a lot of different places. You should be like a sponge. Eventually, you'll put those words into sentences. And then once you're speaking in sentences, you can debate or converse, depending on how you look at it, with other people that are also talking in sentences, you know? And if you are speaking in sentences, you know, think of jujitsu as a physical language. You're talking in sentences, in combinations of words. You're going to be able to run circles around people that are only able to speak single words or they have a very limited vocabulary. Even if they shout, it doesn't really matter because your arguments are going to be so much more coherent, right? So at blue belt, you want to learn a lot of different words. You're not sure which words are going to be really clutch for you, which ones you're gonna use all the time, because there are a lot of words out there that fit perfectly in a particular sentence, but you may not really use them. They may be too ostentatious for everyday use, right? So, I mean, who uses that word, really? Okay. One example of a word, a single word, would be an arm lock. Now, here's an example of an arm lock. This is a crossbody arm lock. It's one of my black belts, TJ, doing this particular arm lock. And there's so many different aspects that you need to learn in order to do a successful arm lock. Now, just the arm lock itself, you got to squeeze your knees together. You have to guide the arm so that his thumb is up. You need to have your heel pulling his head into your hips and have your hips positioned properly underneath his shoulder so that the joint above the joint that you're locking out his elbow, but you got to control the shoulder and you got to control the wrist. You have to have control over both of those joints in order to be able to truly control that center joint. So just learning that and learning what we call the mechanics of a particular submission is really important to do. And that is it. Now, just learning that does not help you that much in the fight because you only know a single word. But as you go on, you learn, you know, okay, that's a triangle. You learn another word. That is a choke that you accomplish when you bring, when you trap one arm and their head in between your legs. You form a triangle position with your legs and then eventually compress their shoulder into their neck and push down on the back of their neck or pull down, depending on how you look at it, with your calf. So this is an extremely effective technique and it goes very well with the arm lock. And, you know, you're starting to get an inkling like, hey, this is a submission map and the arm lock and the triangle are neighbors. Who knew that? You know, so you're starting to see relationships between these different words that you have. Now, blue belt is, you know, it can be a long road, just that journey alone. So each belt level is its own separate journey. And a lot of people get blue belt blues. So they knew what it took to go from, or it's spelled out for them, the techniques they need to know and the positional escapes they need to know in order to get their blue belt. But then they keep sparring against other blue belts, like a really seasoned blue belt who's maybe been training 4 years, and you just have been training a year and you got your blue belt, you're fresh. Dude, you're fresh meat to other people. You're better than the white belts, but you're still, you know, you're going up that escalator of skill, but you're not there yet. And a lot of people get frustrated because you need to be able to bridge that gap to the advanced game. It's good to know words and it's good to know a lot of words, but eventually you have to connect them together. And that is what purple belt is about. So you're stringing your words into sentences. And once you are able to do that, man, the whole game gets so much easier. Purple belt is really the belt of momentum and combinations. So if you go for an arm lock, you'll be able to, let me go down here. Let me show you one of my guys, Garth Perkins. So he has a school in upstate New York. Garth is a great, great dude. His jiu-jitsu had kind of been on hold. He teaches multiple martial arts, but I really wanted to get him to purple belt. And part of that was a training method I employ where I have people string those words into sentences. And so we're gonna just take a look at some of his combinations. So he's doing a little guard pass going around. Let's go a little further here. So we got a choke. He goes out. Oh, gets an arm lock. Do you see how all these things are connected? They're all together. Oh, she rolls out. I'm going to keep that arm and go into a crucifix position, perpendicular position from the back. You know, he grabs the arm, sweeps her over. Now we're getting some back shots here. We're back into sparring. But just look how he goes from one technique to the next. Oh, this is great. This is traditional Gracie jiu-jitsu. And then something a little new school. So we're kind of honoring the old and embracing the new. So that's how you really get good. And a lot of people at Blue Belt, you need to be able to put in hours drilling with your partner. You need to be able to have the discipline to be able to start putting these things into combination. And that's where it's at. When they resist one technique, you go into the next. Boom. Okay. So when we're talking about the purple belt, many consider this to be the miniature black belt. And purple belt's a pretty good place to be. You can absolutely smash and play with white belts. Blue belts, some will give you a hard time, especially if they're, you know, particularly athletic or they have a really good grappling background, like they were judo black belt or like collegiate wrestler or something like that. But at purple, you know how to submit people, which is a huge deal. And at this point, most of your like self-defense worries and issues, those are gone. You know, it's more about the dynamic problem solving of someone's able to beat you. It's just like physical chess. You want to learn what it takes, the moves it takes to beat them. And your moves that work on one person are not, they might work against somebody else. They probably will, but not everybody. Some people are going to be immune to your best attacks. So you have to kind of round out your game and start filling in the holes that you might have in your game. Because as a purple belt, you should know how to attack people from the guard, from the mount, from half guard top, half guard bottom, from the back. You should know how to take people down. There's a ton of different positions that you need to know. And if you have a really good guard and are wicked, you can even tap like brown belts, maybe even caught a black belt, but you don't really have a good top game, or you know, you don't know anything about leg locks, you should start learning now. You've got to start filling in those gaps at purple belt. So we'll just kind of keep it moving here. I'm glancing at the time. We're doing well, but I want to keep moving. So Garth did a fantastic demonstration where he linked together and very smoothly without a lot of effort or jerkiness, he's able to transition from one technique to another during his purple belt demonstration. He did phenomenally well. And the entire point of drilling over and over again with a training partner, which is to get from blue to purple or purple to brown, you really need a good training partner. They're worth their weight in gold. That was some of the most valuable advice that my instructor ever gave me. You need to get a training partner, because with that training partner, the sensitivity you develop through one person will apply to all opponents and training partners in the future. So it can be difficult to really develop sensitivity, physical sensitivity, tactile sensitivity. So tactile sensitivity has been proven is so much faster than visual acuity or sensitivity. So you can watch something happen and then it has to process. Then you realize, okay, I got to move out of the way with boxing or whatever it happens to be. But tactile sensitivity is much, much faster. So you can develop the ability to read, to feel, and to read pressure and weight distribution with your partner or opponent. So that's what the sensitivity is about. And you get that through a training partner. You drill with the training partner, and then you make sure that your transitions from one technique to another are not like hopping from here to here. It's more like smoothly stepping from here to here. Okay. So now, boom, brown belt. What do we got going on? So we had words, sentences, paragraphs. Paragraphs, you need to have extended arguments. So you've engaged in the physical debate with your opponent or your partner, and you need to be able to, you know, if the first technique almost never works. I mean, you might get lucky, but that usually does not work initially. So you should be kind of unattached to that. And then the second technique has a better chance of working. They resist the first technique, you move to the second technique. They resist the second technique, you move to the third technique. So at purple belt, you really need 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, and those should be really smooth. But at brown belt, you have to be 5, 6, 7. You need to be that deep in your knowledge. So if that technique didn't work, boom, you can just move on to the next thing. And sometimes that involves a greater positional change. You might be in the mount, you might dismount to neon belly position or side control, but you continue, or north south, but you continue to attack based off of their resistance and what is an easy position to transition into. So let's, and that is one of the best places to be in the art. White belt is great, and then brown belt is also amazing because you can hang out at brown belt for a long time. Once you are good, and you know you're good, then you kind of develop a deep confidence where it doesn't really matter. You go into any school as a brown belt, they respect you. And you get to work a game, your game. And you know, if you're working on something, like a reversal or an escape from a submission, and somebody taps you because you didn't get out in time, it's not that big of a deal because you're not a black belt. You're a brown belt. You're respected, but you don't have all the pressure. And you know, you also become, I think this is a perfect time to become the perfect student. This is a time where you'll want to do, I think you should do a little bit of cross training. I think you want to do a little bit of cross training now at brown belt. And what kind of cross training would you want to do? One thing that I recommend is Ashtanga yoga. I think that helps balance you, alerts you to asymmetries, keeps your low back strong, flexible. Secret to youth is a supple and flexible spine, and yoga will help you with that. You know, you can also do judo. Say, for example, that, okay, I'm a brown belt, but my takedowns are not very good, or the ability to take a person from standing position and then put them on their back, where you eliminate 50% of their movement options behind them. Plus, now they have to fight against you, gravity, your body weight. You know, that's a very important part of the process of eliminating movement options from your opponent, which is what Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and Jiu-Jitsu is essentially about. So I feel that if you need to do judo or learn leg locks, or, you know, you need physical cross training, you know, you don't want to have any weak links in your chain. You don't need that much strength, physical strength in jiu-jitsu. You don't need to be much stronger than the other person, but you need to be strong enough. You need to be able to have the isometric strength. So if they pick you up, you can hold a position, an arm lock position, a submission. You know, you can hold on to your partner and your opponent with pressure and independently move your legs while keeping your upper body tight, or keeping your lower body tight. If you look at the UFC fighter like Khabib, I won't try to pronounce the last name, but Khabib can lock his lower body and then has his upper body free to strike. You know, and that is the kind of upper body, lower body symmetry and asymmetry, movement asymmetry, that you need to be able to master as a brown belt. And those are high level physical skills. That's not just like break the wrist and walk away. That is something that takes a lot of time, a lot of sensitivity, a lot of physical training, a lot of programming. We're using our conscious mind to program our body so that we don't have to think. Now, check it out. Byron Higginbotham, he's a black belt under me. He's up in Medford, Oregon. And I just want you to kind of look at some of his combinations here. You know, there have been many. Chris Makuta is another affiliate who did a beautiful demonstration of where we're in sparring. But, you know, you got to be able to have a lot of different options. And, you know, he's a beast. Look at all these options. at all these options. From the top, from the bottom, chase the guy. The guy responds into you, whatever. And you really, I feel like at brown belt, as a pretty competent Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu student, you should be able to do an MMA fight. You should be able to go in there and, you know, acquit yourself quite well. You may not submit the guy, but you should be able to do well. And a lot of guys in the early days of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, you know, the arts are very, very closely related, where you could go do an MMA fight as a brown belt. I mean, that's how Dana White saw Kenny Florian. He was fighting much bigger guys. That was just cross training for getting his black belt. He wanted to have that experience. Now, I have many teammates that have done MMA, but I haven't personally done it. I've competed, certainly, but MMA was something that I didn't do. And do I regret it? No, but it kind of would have been nice to have had that experience. I'm 45. I'm definitely not going to do it now. No upside at the current moment. But being able to have the confidence to take an MMA match as a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu brown belt, you know, that's a pretty high bar in the realm of martial arts, and particularly, you know, resistive, sportive, combative martial arts. So now is the time for cross training. Here, let me just give you the, here's Makuta, Chris Makuta, his, you know, so unbelievably good. Let me just tone this down. Like, look at these sweeps that he's doing, and the way he links all these techniques. Boom, push, pull, push one way, they resist, and you're using that. You know, look, also note how circular it is, and the use of his legs, using them like hands. You really should be quite global in your submissions as a brown belt. Upper body, lower body. You know, if I can't pass her guard, I'll do something else. So there's a tremendous amount of learning that still takes place as a brown belt. And to be honest, you know, initially at like white, blue, it's like what to do. So one way to look at it is you're learning how to drive. At purple belt, you know how to drive. Now you're mastering the course. You're studying the course more than learning how to drive. You're focusing on the performance of driving. And at brown belt, you want to really study the critical corners in that race that either prevent you from overtaking other people and winning the race, or you want to be able to essentially overcome resistance from your opponent at the 95 yard line. Like, you almost hit that touchdown, you know, running up the field is what you learn at white and blue, you know, but at brown belt, you've run up the field and you're at the 95 yard line and you want to make it into touchdown territory, but you know, they're blocking you. So if you have an arm that's fully extended and they're blocking you, you know, how do you overcome that resistance? That is still work. Now, as a white belt, blue belt, you might think, oh man, I want that kind of work. If only I have that kind of skill, I would love that work. Now, as a brown belt, you are still frustrated because you can positionally dominate somebody, you can work them over, and you have the submission, but you just can't finish it. And it's difficult. It's a difficult position to be. So there is frustration at every belt level. Yeah, you're getting your butt kicked at white and blue, but your progress meter is so much easier to ratchet up. And then at brown belt, you're like, I've been doing this a long time. I've been doing this 8 years, 10 years. You still have work to do. And it's not as glamorous as it was before. And you may not get the kind of recognition, but you know, a really skilled eye, a good teacher, they can guide you, they can tell you, and they notice. So Chris did an amazing belt demonstration. If you haven't seen my videos on YouTube, definitely please check it out. Now let's talk about the black belt. So words, sentences at purple. Brown belt is paragraphs, and now we're cutting it back. Now we're going to poetry. So black belt is about shortcuts, and it's about a new beginning. You know, you get your black belt, you're a white belt amongst black belts. And there are black belts out there that can, that even if you're very, very good, you know, there are black belts that work me over. And that's the way it is. And you have to accept it. And don't run from that reality. Embrace it. Be like, man, there's still more to learn. That's the good news. That's the good news in the journey. So let's talk a little bit about black belt. Now, some of you are thinking like, oh, I'll never get black belt, or I can't wait to get black belt. It's essentially the last belt you'll ever get. So make the journey to it worth it. And I think you're going to be doing good. Let's go over a couple things here. It's a journey. Beautiful picture by Rick here. It is a journey. And, you know, teaching is one of the elements that you do at Black Belt. You might do it earlier, but teaching is very, very important to do, I feel, as a black belt, because it is a finishing school for your own practice. Teaching for others means you can't be as selfish, and you have to learn what techniques would be good for other people, other body types, given their current skill set, given their physical dexterity, flexibility limitations, handicaps, what have you, even personality disposition. You know, so teaching is very, very important. Here I am teaching at my first school in Bend, Oregon, and it was a beautiful time where you learn a lot about yourself and you help empower other people. You know, so very, very satisfying. Here I am presenting I'm graduating my first black belt, Donald Bowerman, great guy, devoted student. This was a really special day. And look at his face, not just the black eye, but like the, am I ready for this? But he was. He won Gracie Worlds. He won a bunch of competitions and he was ready for it. You know, he was ready for it. Are you ready for it? Only you know that and your teacher. But don't wish to get that too early. Trust me, because people expect magic when you have a black belt. Okay, there I am. Now that's generational progression. My instructor, Roy Harris, is on the left. My first black belt, Donald, and then there I am as well with Grandmaster Helio Gracie in the background. I really love that photo, and that's what it's about. It's about passing on the baton of knowledge to that next generation. If you haven't seen Peter Hulse, his Peter's Crucible on YouTube, please check it out. I'll spare you his torture, but it was a great rite of passage and coming of age, and it resonates with a lot of people. And it's about 3.5 million views right now. Didn't expect it to blow up like that, but it certainly did. And Rick Ellis, No Mercy for Old Men is the title of this video. Rick's black belt was also beautiful. It's a mini movie that describes, you know, his journey through the art. Oh my gosh. So I'm kind of running low on time here. So let me just breeze through a few other things in about 5 minutes. Okay. So extras, enhancing the journey. Part of that is travel. I'm going to go through this really quickly. Travel, movement arts are an international language, and jiu-jitsu gives you an excuse to travel, and it's allowed me to travel all over the world. And I just want to give you just a couple glimpses here. Here I am in Moscow. I have an affiliate over there. I'm in Kuwait. My friend Ahmed Al-Huli has invited me over several times, and it's amazing. And I mean, just check out some of these photos. Like they stop to pray in training. It allows you entry into different worlds, and it connects you to people all around the world. I included this photo because I can't tell you how happy I was here. It has nothing to do with jiu-jitsu. Jiu-jitsu gave me the opportunity to meet these camels. And these camels were like, they're more like dogs than like moose or something. They were inquisitive, and I don't know, I was just so happy. You never know what kind of adventures jiu-jitsu will get you into. Here I am in Holland. I did this a couple of years ago before COVID. And, you know, you get to see, look at this architecture, you know. I mean, New York used to be New Amsterdam. I didn't know that, but going there and taking the tour, that's kind of the things you find out. Here I am in Italy, the Dolomite Mountains, and it's just, it's gorgeous. So there are some, where jiu-jitsu can take you. This is a, this is another video on YouTube. Please check it out. Some really spectacular scenery there. And I'll finish it up with, you know, another great way to, you know, if you're a musician, you don't always have to practice. Sometimes you go to a concert, or get together with friends and jam. And it's another way of enhancing and learning about music. And seminars are just, if you can get one or two takeaways from a seminar from a new teacher, that is fantastic. It connects you with other people. And here's my instructor teaching at CVBJJ, where I teach and train in Coachella Valley, just 2 hours east of Los Angeles. And, you know, it's about, look at the attention. Look at the attention that people are paying him, because he's been down that road. They respect it. And he's helping them. You're not going to absorb everything, but if you can take away one or two things, that's huge. And then finally, you know, your goals shift over time. So initially you might come in with more of a self-defense and protection orientation. And then that shifts to, well, keeping in shape and I'm having fun. Then you get addicted to the dynamic problem solving and like, oh, this guy can beat me. How can I beat him? It's incredibly addictive, particularly if you like difficult things. And ultimately it's about creating community and empowering people. You know, it's physical literacy. And by training in jiu-jitsu, you're adding to the community. And by teaching jiu-jitsu, you're creating community in a different way. And I think that ultimately, these arts are not about fighting. You transcend that and you bring people together. So that is me as a younger man, you know, looking forward to sharing the art. And hopefully I've been able to share a little bit of the journey that got me here. And hopefully that will save you a few steps on the journey of your own. So there we go. We'll stop the share. And okay, I think we're doing good. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Oh.
Yes. Wow. Thank you. That I'm buzzing with all that rich information. We have sort of a two-part question here, or I guess two questions in one. This is from Sam. How do you know you have a good training partner of the same size? And the second part is, how can I find a good training partner?
Okay, great question. You need to pay attention in class in order to find them. Look for somebody who you know, maybe have trained with, and you can tell if it's working, if it's good, if you guys have some synergy. Now, you can also, ideally, your training partner is more advanced, and they pull you along. So you're kind of soaking up knowledge that they, things that they are working on, you get better at too. So that is, you need to have the chemistry, and you can kind of feel that when you train with them, but also you need somebody who does not want to spar all the time. If you end up in a grappling match every time you go to train, you need to drill. You need to have someone who might be a little bit passive. Or maybe you need to be that passive person, but you need to stay focused on drilling and learning the techniques, not in sparring.
Okay, so we do have time for some more questions. Please feel free to add them into the chat box. There is a question actually I would like to ask you, Roy. Sure. You mentioned frustration in the beginning. You mentioned it particularly with the white belt level and at the brown belt, and you said that frustration is a good thing. And I was hoping you could expand on that. Why is frustration a good thing?
Yeah, frustration is a good thing because if you didn't have it, you wouldn't be coming back. You wouldn't be coming back to the, I'm not going to say jiu-jitsu is like an intermittent, well, it's more like an intermittent reward, right? So sometimes you attempt things and sometimes they succeed, and sometimes you attempt things and you're thwarted. And that lack of certain success is what's actually the addictive quality of jiu-jitsu. But, you know, someone said, you don't gamble to win, you gamble for the losing. I don't really understand that, but kind of I do, because jiu-jitsu is not a certain thing. And the frustration, and I've had people tell me that they watch me roll and they are frustrated because they are not, you know, as it's not effortless, but you have to use just enough energy to be able to accomplish your goal. And then it looks like you're very calm and relaxed. Or you can be frustrated by, you know, I'm pretty good and pretty experienced, but then every once in a while I run into somebody, it's not your day. They got your number, or they have a particular entry into a submission that they keep getting you over and over again. And it's frustrating, but that's the good news, because that feeds your drive to evolve and improve.
Would you say that frustration is sort of like a muscle in a way, like that when you make that strong, that ability to withstand that frustration and let that power your drive, that's something that can be developed and grown over time?
Oh, absolutely. It is a muscle is one analogy. Another way of thinking about it is you become desensitized to failure. And so it's not that big of a deal if you end up missing or failing your attempt to, you know, to win. It's okay. You failed 1,000 times. I have been tapped countless times. I have lost so many times that it really is not that big of a deal to me anymore. And nor should it be to anyone out there. Tap early, tap often. But you have to have kind of develop a taste for the bitter. Not just the sweet.
When I hear that, I think that to be at that black belt, you need to have that ability to be able to taste the bitter not allow the losses to get you to get you down, like for it to, in a way, be able to roll off your back.
Exactly. If you let it, and I've seen really good people that don't get tapped very often, just kind of spirit crushed, but only for a day, or, you know, or they go to a tournament and they, you know, it doesn't go that well. It's okay. The important thing is to go back, keep training. Every day is different. And as long as you recognize that, and chip away at it. That's another thing that I learned. There's a black belt, John Frankel, who, it's interesting. He said, chip away at it. Don't try to win it all at once. You can't win it all in one night. Chip away at it. And that has helped me immeasurably. And I try to pass that on to people, that it's slow and steady progression. And sometimes it doesn't even feel like you're progressing. You feel like you're plateaued, but you are progressing. Sometimes it's the root or the bulb is blooming. And if you stop watering it, you know, it's never going to break through and become the flower. You have to kind of, even if you can't see the progress, you got to believe that you're making progress and be okay with very small incremental gains.
Well, thank you so much for this very, very rich and informative and inspiring presentation that you just gave. I feel like I've just learned so much, and so much more than I expected. And just before we close, there's a few announcements that I need to make. If you would like to continue to talk about jiu-jitsu, you can go into the conference portal, into the coffee break area, or you can go into the Facebook groups. And there's also Roy's website. If you want to check that out, I think that the link should be in the chat box. Well, it will be. And if you would like to be able to watch this presentation and all these slides again and have them, as well as all the other sessions and talks for this conference. You can, if you like, own the whole library. You can purchase it for 50% of the regular price for the duration of the conference. And with that will come summaries for each session. There's also audio only. If you like to listen to podcasts, you can watch and digest at your own pace. And also these purchases allow us to make the conference accessible to everyone and free for the people who can't afford to purchase it. And again, thank you so much, Roy, for this presentation. We are actually going to give you the final word here by telling us your top tip on how to stay embodied.
Move every day, even if it's just walking, even if it's just a little yoga in your room, getting up off the office chair. Move every day. Movement is life, and it really helps your mood. So stay positive, everyone. COVID is, it can bring you down. The restrictions can be a little frustrating, but we'll come out of this healthier, stronger, and hopefully all moving in sync once more.